Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 2. Special wee tribute there to our new rulers who've once again managed to dominate matters. And apologies for the slight delay in getting this podcast out. It was all recorded with Mark earlier on in the week. However, a trackpad problem resulted in my computer going away for 2 days to get it repaired. So, wee bit of a delay getting this. We discuss in a very long conversation the performance against Aberdeen, a few other things about the Aberdeen game and the last couple of games of the season, and we also discuss the cull of the squad. However, because that chat went on for about an hour and 20 minutes, I decided to split it into two podcasts to make it more of a bite-size and manageable format. So the first one, since I'm liking my A's and B's following the Andy Ritchie one last week, the first one... discussing the Aberdeen game, any changes Ronnie Dyla may or may not make for the St Johnstone and ICT game at the end of the season. And then 248B will be the cull. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cameron. And a special trip to our new leaders from Paul Weller and the boys. Enjoy a wee bit more. So I'm joined now by lefty boy on Twitter, Mark Cameron. How you doing, Mark?
I'm very well, Harry. Very well indeed. Still happy with 4 in a row.
Yeah, and you were in your usual place, I take it, in the travelling support up at Pittodrie at the weekend?
Yes, I was. Travelled up Sunday lunchtime. Got in just in time for kick-off. Not the best of views from that stand at Pittodrie. We were stuck away in the corner, but the travelling Celtic support were in good spirits. Very good atmosphere throughout the game. And, pretty decent result at the end of the day.
Well, first of all, travelling up, you go in a bus?
We go in a bus to home games. Unfortunately for Sunday there, we only had 5 or 6 tickets, so we were up in a couple of cars. So 2 hours up to Aberdeen, park up, and then pretty much straight into the game.
So you were you weren't in that convoy of people who are pulled over en route to every away game?
Not on Sunday, no, but yeah, I mean... Exactly, that's one of the things that the Celtic support in particular, every away game, it seems nowadays you get pulled over in Cumbernauld or in Perth or on your way to Inverness or wherever, and you have Scotland's police force checking your bus and just generally slowing you down and much rather be on your way to supporting your team.
There's two things, as a non-drinker and a non-supporters bus person, there's two things that cross my mind by that. Number one, see when we go up to Inverness for a 12:30 kickoff, who are the people who need a drink at that time in the morning? Always crosses my mind. I see when I read the tweets sometimes on a Sunday morning or a Saturday morning if we are going up to Dingwall, and it's like 8:30 just to watch out, we're getting pulled over, and I think, and see if there's any of you having a drink, you should ask the police to take you to a hospital if you're needing a drink at that time in the morning. But the second thing is, The police need to get a life. Yeah. Well, I mean, are they looking, like, do you see the buses when they go up? Do they pull up and act like Vikings from 100, 200, 1,000 years ago? Do you smash up towns on the way through? Or are we all normal human beings as part of society? I can't get my head around it.
Well, we're football fans, so we get treated differently from the rest of society as well, you know, Harry. But yeah, I mean, why do the police have to spend so much time on a Saturday and Sunday morning checking every single supporter's bus that's going to a football game? You know, really, what harm are they doing?
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, you know, if guys are going to have a drink at that time in the morning, my attitude to it is, they've worked hard all week. It's their day out. Why shouldn't they relax and enjoy themselves? As long as they're behaving, then more than 99% of them are. So, you know, why don't the police go and catch some real criminals?
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing. See, take that. We're playing at the Hydro in the last week or so. And I'm sure there would have been buses of people, women. I bet you those buses weren't pulled over and checked to see if they were having a bevy. And I tell you who can handle drink far worse than football supporters. It's women in about their 50s on the way to a concert, if you've ever seen them.
Yeah.
They should be allowed out.
Yes. On the way to a Take That concert as well, you could just imagine it. Yeah. So they're
the Isles would have been swimming.
Yes, exactly.
So, and then you got into Pittodrie, and so were you right up in the corner, that bit that prevents you from seeing about a third of the pitch down at the corner flag?
Yeah, that's the one, almost about 10 or 12 rows away from the Aberdeen support. So, you know, every time the ball goes out for a corner or a free kick or a throw-in, you know, you have a quick glance over to the home support, and they're just irate. From the start of the game, it's like we are all of a sudden their biggest rivals and they hate us so much. And and it also, you know, when you're trying to get a view of the far away end of the stadium, you know, you're trying to stretch around everybody else to see what's going on, and, you know, it's not the best of views.
Do you know, there was something, because I had to do something on Sunday afternoon and I was running a bit late, so I had to listen to the first 15, 20 minutes on Radio Scotland. And there was two things about that. Have you ever been to like an SPL game that's not Celtic? Like, or have you ever been to like a game that's other teams and Celtic aren't involved?
Have I ever been to another SPL game that doesn't involve Celtic?
Yes, have you?
Don't be silly, of course I've not.
Well, let me read about that. Have you ever been to another game of football that doesn't involve Celtic?
Yes, I have.
Right, and you're in amongst people who go nuts and they start calling the ref all sorts and you're sitting there going, I have no idea what decision they're complaining about.
Yes. The build-up of anger and frustration from a week's work and the poor refs getting it even though he's in a reasonable game.
So the first 15, 20 minutes, I was listening to Radio Scotland and the Aberdeen, it tends to be wee diddy teams who do that. They complain about everything and you're thinking, I can see what's going on here. The Aberdeen fans seem to be like that on Sunday, listening to it in Radio Scotland. And what really emphasised it to me is Liam McLeod was forgetting he was on BBC Radio Scotland and thought he was on BBC Radio Aberdeen. And it was, Willie Miller was actually, he would be saying, oh, and the Aberdeen, what's the refs missed that, and the Aberdeen fans are going crazy. And it was Willie Miller who was having to say, well, I don't really think there was anything in that, Liam.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I think part of the anger for the Aberdeen fans is, first of all, their club were forced into putting on a guard of honour for the Celtic team. And I'm quite sure the vast majority of Aberdeen fans would not have been in favour of that. So they've got all this built-up anger and frustration in the couple of days leading up to the game. And then as their team comes out, they're being forced to sit through their players applauding or welcoming the champions to their home patch. And then from then in, it's just a case of, we're your biggest rival, so we're going to create atmosphere and every decision is going to go against us, and we're second in the league and we've got a really hard deal here. And, you know, they get the game's only 5 or 10 minutes old and there's not really been anything controversial whatsoever, Harry.
I also think, or I believe, they don't like Ronnie Dyler because the first place that the Ronnie Roar became really famous was at Pittodrie when we won in that 2-1 game.
Yes, that was when Van Dijk scored in the last minute.
That's right, aye.
Yes, that's right. That kind of was the birth of the Ronnie Roar in many respects. And, I think the Aberdeen fans will... You wouldn't want that on your own patch, but, yeah, Aberdeen fans are the... You know, they don't have nearest rivals. You know, they don't really have anybody to call big rivals. I mean, Inverness... Dundee United apparently are their big rivals, but Dundee United and Dundee are in the same street. They have to be rivals, but Aberdeen have never really had rivals as such. So at this moment in time, we are their biggest enemy.
Yeah, they've got to invent rivals.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, which must be a bit sad.
Well, to be fair, it must be pretty difficult because the whole concept of sport is competition and that having someone to go against or pit your wits against. And, you know, most football clubs have a team nearby them, but Aberdeen kind of really don't. They're kind of out there, so they kind of have to make it up as they're going along. And because we're the champions, we're 4 in a row, we're up there, we're celebrating, we're in a good mood. So that naturally puts all their guys into a bad mood. And then they're obviously complaining to the ref how hard done by they are. Because if it hadn't been for the fact that we had to play them 4 times this season, they would only be 2 points behind us.
That's right. Yeah, if they hadn't had to play Celtic, they'd have done all right.
How good was that stat? If we didn't have to play you 4 times, we'd only be 2 points behind you.
Yeah, fantastic, yeah.
That's fun. That is just great.
Yeah, if we'd have just been given all the points for playing you, hey, we could have done all right. And then, of course, probably they were annoyed even more because in the Saturday papers, there was all these quotes from Ronnie Dyler saying things like, well, if you aim for second place, that's the best you'll get.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, and I genuinely feel that you'll always get whatever you accept. So if you're aiming for second, are you ever really going to get first? Really? No. I mean, I think Ronnie's comments were valid. Aberdeen should be looking to win the league.
Yeah.
They should be. Absolutely.
It's that Scottish thing of, I better not aim to be too successful because if I fail, people will make fun of me. So
yes.
You're planning for failure straight away instead of I'm going to aim to be the best.
Yes.
And you know, you maybe wouldn't think this way, but because if I just don't quite make it, I'll be nearly the best. But instead it's that Scottish thing of I'll just aim for mediocrity because then I'll not be disappointed.
Yes. And Harry, do you not think that part of this season has been a breath of fresh air with Ronnie Dyler saying, I want us to win the treble. I want us to win the treble. I've told the team that's what we're aiming for. And there's all sorts of pundits saying, oh, you shouldn't be talking about trebles. Well, he should be talking. Of course he should. He should be talking about making the team as successful as they can and to make sure they've got the winning mentality in every single game. So why should they not talk about winning the trebles? Why should Aberdeen not be talking about we want to win the league?
Absolutely.
You want to be the best that you possibly can.
And I suppose that was one of the things that got me when I spoke to some people who said things like, that's disrespectful to say that you're going to win it. Because again, we're not used to people being that self-confident in Scotland. He never said, we will win the treble. If Celtic are playing in 3 domestic competitions, absolutely Celtic's target should be the treble. Because if it's not the treble, then your obvious next question is, so what trophy are you planning to not win?
Exactly. Absolutely. So for me, it's a whole breath of fresh air, as I said. Of course Ronnie wants to win the treble. He should be saying that from now to the end of next season as well. Guys, okay, we've won the double. Next year, must do better. What does that mean? It means winning the treble.
Exactly. And I just don't see anything wrong. As I say, if I was a Celtic manager at the beginning of the season, I'd be saying our target is to win all 3 trophies,
mm-hmm.
and our target, which we will reassess is to still be in the Champions League at Christmas, and then we'll have a chat at Christmas time to see where we go from there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because if you say to the players, our target's to win the Champions League, deep down they're not going to believe you. But if you say to the players, our target's to be in the Champions League after Christmas, that's doable, that's achievable. You then have a conversation after Christmas and you've gone through the January transfer window and say, right, okay, our target's to win the next tie.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm very much good with that mentality, Harry. And long may it continue.
So, with that positive mentality, what did you make of the game overall against Aberdeen?
Overall, I felt that the wind played a factor in the early part of the game. It wasn't the best of games, but I thought that it was nice to see Darnell Fisher making a start.
Yeah.
I thought going forward he was reasonably good, but he got caught out a couple of times. Lunging in, I think, with Niall McGinn a couple of times. So for him, it was good. Definitely good to see him making making another start. So hopefully he's going to get enough games under his belt to get a championship medal. It would be a shame if he didn't get that. And then I think the two centre-backs done pretty decent. Aberdeen did have a couple of chances from fairly far out with Barry Robson. Ezaguirre looked pretty comfortable. Brown beat on, yeah, very, very decent. Commons was okay. Thought Johansson done a lot of runabout. I felt that he put in a lot of good work. He had a chance in either half. And for me, you should have scored both of them. Mm-hmm. Both clean through on the keeper. And if you're the player of the year for the club and for the country, then really when you're clean through one-on-one with a keeper, you really want to be scoring at least one of them, surely.
I felt our chances. So there was it Griffiths that had the shot that then rebounded out to Commons? And then the keeper had the double save. And then in the second half, there was Johansson, which then went back out to Forrest, and the keeper had the save.
Yes.
And both of those, for the double save, I felt each one of our shots was at the perfect height for the keeper. It was neither down on the deck or neither was it high enough top corner. It was right, if you're a goalkeeper, the height you want it.
Yes, yes. That very much so. So he could have done better in both of them. There was one near the end of the first half where there was a long ball played through and he came in on the far side and he kind of tried to chip it over the keeper.
Yeah.
I think that was pretty close to half time. Harry, that was just a little bit lackluster for me, to be honest. I thought he should really have done better. I would have, if it had been me, I would have put my laces right through it and put a lot of power into it. I think he tried to chip it over the top of the keeper.
He maybe thought that's the obvious thing, is to put your laces through it and hit it. So the keeper's going to be getting ready to go down. If I chip it, he's going to be on his toes to go down and forwards when he actually needs to be on his toes to go up and back. And he might, maybe that was his thought process.
Yes. Yeah, could well have been. I felt that although Aberdeen had a lot of the possession, for me, they didn't do a lot with it in the final third. So I think we curtailed their attacking moves. As I said, Robson had a couple of chances from, maybe 25, 30 yards out, which I think our keeper, Craig Gordon, had pretty much well covered. So they didn't pose, in my mind, a great threat to us. The chances that we created, as I said, Johansson a couple of times through one-on-one, with the keeper, yeah, you've got to be doing better than that. But at times I felt that we broke with pace, and that's obviously exemplified by the goal from Scott Brown, where we broke away and, we were, a lot of times we were 3-on-3 or 4-on-4 as we were pushing forward. And to me, we should have capitalised a lot more than that throughout the game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I suppose that's one of the things with an attacking group of four, that's probably one of the things that Ronnie Dyla would I can imagine him wanting to enhance for next season is when we break away in that, to break away with greater speed. And there's been a few times this season where we've broken away and been 2-on-1 or 3-on-1 and managed to make a complete mess of it.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes the more men we've got in the forward position, then the worse we do. And, you know, we've wasted a lot of opportunities and those forward areas where we're breaking at pace with, as you said, 3 or 4 players going, you know, 4-on-3. And we need to be more clinical in that area next season. And in particular, you know, some of the times in the Champions League qualifiers, then, you know, we're going to be up against it. And when we're breaking away at pace, then you need to be capitalising on your opportunities. So, we certainly need to be more clinical in front of goals. Absolutely.
But the thing that I was most pleased about the victory was Aberdeen with this, we are your nearest challengers. If we didn't have to play you, we'd actually be quite good. Nonsense. I was a bit worried thinking, we've won the league. What would hate to happen is they get a result so that we are only, whatever it would have been, we would have been 8 points ahead of them. And then with 2 games left, we draw on Friday night and they win. And end up, we win the league by only 6 points and they claim, look, see, we can put in a real challenge, when the reality is we'd won it. And it was on Sunday, Chelsea were at Liverpool and Sky Sports were talking to Souness on the pitch. And he was talking about Liverpool needing to win these games, and Liverpool might have a chance simply because Chelsea have already won the league. And he said, for example, I remember one season when I was at Liverpool, we won the league with 7 games still to go. And out of those 7 games, we won none, drew 2 and lost 5. Because it was Bob Paisley's last season. We just couldn't get ourselves up. In fact, I remember the second last game, getting the boys in the dressing room and saying, this is the last game Bob Paisley will ever manage us at Anfield. We really need to do it for him. And we just couldn't, because we just missed that edge and we drew.
Yes.
So to go to Pittodrie under those circumstances of, that's us, we're there, that was the other thing that really pleased me. Your point about Aberdeen had the ball, but they never looked like they were actually going to do anything with it.
No, exactly. Once the league's won, and then psychologically, you know, the players have been working on that, you know, since last June, pretty much.
Yep.
So, you know, that's 8-9 months ago, and they've always seen winning the league as the finishing line in this competition. And then obviously, you know, it could have been a cup final, but that didn't work out because of dodgy refereeing, but that's another story. But yeah, once you've got a target in your mind and you're over that target, I can imagine it being very, very difficult to continue to be motivated to do that. But you just felt that because it was Aberdeen, because there were rivals, and because there's been, you know, sort of issues with them over the last year or so, that, you know, our players were going to be up for it. And I think they pretty much were. Scott Brown just typifies what Celtic are all about just now, in my mind anyway. And
he's been fantastic this season.
Yeah, he's been incredible, hasn't he? I mean, if you analyse the goal on Sunday, so he wins the ball on the edge of the D, of the edge of our D. So we're what, 22 yards from our goal line, and he wins a perfectly timed tackle, and in years gone by he maybe wouldn't have done that. And then he pushes forward and then passes the ball off to, is it Johansson?
Mm-hmm.
Or Johansson, and then it goes out to Armstrong, and Armstrong is, you know, giving Shea Logan a tough time out in that wing, and pulls the ball back in. In some respects, Scott Brown is the last person you'd expect to have completed that run.
Yeah.
But in other respects, he's the very guy, because the change in that guy from his early days at Celtic is incredible. I mean, I don't ever recall anybody ever calling Scott Brown a box-to-box midfielder. But wow, on Sunday, was that not exactly what he was?
Yeah, and
he never made those runs, to be quite honest, under Neil Lennon. He would never have contemplated that.
And everything about that was about anticipation. He anticipated Barry Robson not quite getting to the ball and won the challenge. And he then anticipated the ball in better than the defenders that Stuart Armstrong was going to play.
Yes, because he was, when Armstrong was out on the wing, getting past his two defenders, Brown was already in position. Brown was in perfect position to receive that ball. You're right, he anticipated it just so well. And yeah, what a transformation in that guy. And he looks like he's really happy. And, I heard some of the comments he's made since Sunday, Harry, and he looks as if he's really here to stay now. He obviously gets the whole Ronnie Dyla mentality and the whole fitness, the whole high pressure passing game. And as I said, I can't really ever recall him doing a box to box run like he did. And I mean, he was before 3 yards, 4 yards out when he put the ball in the net from a position of 22 yards from our goal line.
Yeah. But was it BBC Scotland, I think, it measured it at 99 yards? Or was it Sky? Somebody measured it. He, from winning that challenge to putting the ball in the back of the net, he ran 99 yards.
That's just incredible. I mean, that's fantastic. And that's a tribute to him and also to the rest of the team and the manager about how well things have changed for that guy. He really gets it. And he would have been a serious contender for player of the year. Very much so. And that's what, 2 goals in the last 2 games?
Yeah, and yeah. It's the way that it just comes across that you just get the impression him and Ronnie Dyla have become really close.
Yes.
And you get the impression that he is absolutely a leader to that team. I love the way Ronnie Dyla calls him Bruni.
Yes.
In that Norwegian lilt.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that there's a relationship built up there, obviously very, very quickly. Bruni was injured at the start of the season as well, and you think if we had him a little bit more then, things could have been a bit different.
Yeah, but I suppose it's also to do with how much the players have then bought into Ronnie Dyla. And Brown's probably one of those people who's really, as you say, you can see that he's just really bought. Okay, well, I'm just noticing the time. So before we get to the transfer window, we've got 2 games left this season.
Yes.
So how are we going to perform in those 2 games, taking into account that the season's over and taking into account players having only 2 or 3 weeks off before they're back to pre-season training? So what do you think is going to happen in those games? And do you think Ronnie Dyla will do anything with the team?
I think he's going to rest a couple of players. I think he may consider resting the guys who are going to be going on international duty. So that's going to be, Scott Brown, Ezagiri.
I don't know if Norway are playing any international games in there.
I'm not sure. But I think anyone who has a potential to be on international duty in June may well get a little break. I really hope that Darnell Fisher, I think he's on 8 games. My understanding is you need 9 to get a championship medal. So I would be hoping that he would be the first name on the team sheet for Friday night in Perth to make sure he gets his medal. But yeah, I think he's going to tinker with the team somewhat over the next, certainly on Friday night, and then for the final game of the season a week on Sunday. Yeah, he's going to want to make sure that everybody or all his main guys got on the park.
Well, so I've just looked through, and Norway are playing on the 8th and the 12th of June.
So there you go. So that means Johansson's probably going to get a rest.
Yeah, and there was some stuff I heard about the only reason Armstrong and Griffiths weren't considered for the last Scotland squad was in agreement with Celtic that the move was one big enough transitioning to give him time to settle in. So I wouldn't be surprised. That's me on the Norwegian site and an advert coming on. I wouldn't be surprised if one or both of Armstrong and Griffiths got in the Scotland squad. Armstrong and Mackay Stephen got in the Scotland squad. I wouldn't be overly surprised if Griffiths got in the Scotland squad.
Yeah, I think that would cap a fairy tale season for Lee. I think he's, you know, if you think back to where he was sort of October, November, Harry, and he's just come on leaps and bounds. I mean, two hat-tricks in April, top goal scorer coming from nowhere. That's just fantastic. And one of the things that I actually wanted to check, he's played now, 52 games for Celtic. Now, somebody told me the other night, and I need to check this, that he'd actually played more games for us than Mikael Lustig. Could that be right?
Well, how few games has Lustig played this season?
He's not played many this season. I'm going to check that after we go off here. But someone told me that the other night, and I was surprised if Griffiths has played more games than Mikael Lustig. But I mean, it may be right. I mean, Lustig's been with us since 2012, so he's 2 years more than Griffiths.
Yep.
So that's interesting. But Lee Griffiths, if he was to cap off his season, no pun intended, with a cap for Scotland, that would be fantastic. Tremendous turnaround for the guy. And you see him on Sunday at the final whistle, wants to go over to the fans, celebrate with his family. It's just fantastic to see. Really pleased for that guy.
So if those people, so you think they'll be rested, so what's the score going to be against St Johnstone on Friday night?
It's going to be one each.
Right.
And then on Sunday, week on Sunday.
Against Inverness.
We'll get the trophy. So it's going to be one of those games where we score two goals really early on and then nothing happens for the next, 80 minutes and everybody's just hanging around for the finale.
Yeah.
But what better way to end the season than to have a game wrapped up early doors? And we can do a little bit of showboating, a little bit of ole, ole, and finish up with
a massive Ronnie Roar at the end of the season.
Massive Ronnie Roar and big celebrations for all the guys because they've done remarkably well.
Okay, well, I'll hold you to those predictions and I'll speak to you again soon.
So just one thing before you go. Harry, you asked me what it was really like at Aberdeen on Saturday.
Yes.
Sunday, sorry. Did you hear that okay?
I did, yeah. And I heard it, and David Tanner was trying to pretend that he thought that was good fun on Sky. Going on behind him.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he thought that was great fun. The fans on Sunday were brilliant. A lot of them stayed a long time after the game.
I said
for a second running row.
Were you in Bordeaux when we went there under Martin O'Neill?
No, I missed that game.
Ah, right, because it actually reminded me of that game because I remember the stewards just couldn't get people out of the ground.
Yes, yeah. I heard from a few friends who were over for that game. And, you know, one of the things that when I first started going back in the early 80s, I remember going up to Aberdeen and being in the beach end behind the goals where the Aberdeen supporters are now, and we got a one-each draw. And we were singing for half an hour after the game because we got a one-each draw with Aberdeen. And eventually the stewards put out the lights on a wet, cold, miserable Saturday afternoon to try and get us to leave. But we were up there singing and celebrating because we got a one-each draw with Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen.
Times have changed.
Times have changed.
They're now celebrating if they only lose by one goal to us.
Yeah, because that means they would only have been 2 points behind us instead of 14.
Exactly. So, yes, you enjoyed yourself on Sunday and you're going to enjoy the party.
Absolutely. 4 in a row, 6 to go.
Yeah, exactly. Right, cheers, Mark.
Okay, take care. All the best, Harry.
Right, cheers. Bye. Well, I hope you enjoy Mark Cameron as a guest, because if you don't, then don't listen to podcast 248B, because he's on that one too. That one, he's getting into much more detail about the changes that are going to have to take place in and around Celtic Park in the playing squad side of things as we prepare for our march to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, etc. in a row. And Champions League football. Meantime, the supporters at Pittodrie weren't the only people having a party this week. You might have also seen some stuff about Chris Commons' partner Lisa Haig having a bit of a party. And she made me feel old because she was talking about how she felt old turning 30. Anyway, she's wanting to raise £30,000 for Marie Curie, and that kicks off on Saturday, 23rd of May, in the Kerrydale Suite at Celtic Park with a buffet, live entertainment, auction, raffle, DJ and birthday cake. And you can do that. Tickets are available at £30 per person, table of 10 at £300, contacting Celtic FC Foundation at celticfc.co.uk. That's the CFC Foundation at celticfc.co.uk, or phone 0141 551 4262. That's Lisa Haig's birthday party, which is part of her wanting to raise £30,000 for Marie Curie in her 30th year. Saturday, 23rd May, Kerrydale Suite. £30 a person. Anyway, enough of me. I'm probably going to upload podcast 248B within 24 hours of 248A. So, good night. God bless. Speak to you soon.